Blog Talk Radio.
And that's right, we definitely want to hear it, football fans. It's time for the End Zone, Falcon Zone, Super Pro Football Show. I hope you guys come with plenty of ammunition, because I know our guns are itching to go blazing today. Tons of things to talk about on the show. First, we want to welcome in, as always, my awesome co-host, Coach Haywood Hill, and of course, Mr. Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing good, Jeremy, doing great.
Like I said, we have a ton we want to get to, and it's almost become our tagline for the show.
First of all, Jeremy, before you get started, yeah. I'd like to wish our own Coach Hill a very, very happy birthday today. I won't give his age, but we definitely want to make sure we give him his birthday shout-out today.
Absolutely, we want to wish him a happy birthday. And how does it feel to be 24?
It feels wonderful. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, hopefully you had a good celebration, because it's now game time, and we're definitely going to perform. Like I said, there is tons to get to. We're going to talk about some of the key injuries, offensive and defensively, across the board, and how they affect different things. We're going to kind of, I guess it's almost like one of those suicide pools, as they say. We're going to figure out which head coach is going to be next on the block. We're going to talk about which is the best division right now. And when we get to Falcon Zone, once again, the cannons will be firing, and it's not because the Buccaneers are anywhere near. We got some stuff we really want to get into. And as always, if you want to contact the show, you can click the link that you probably did off of Facebook, Twitter, any of our media outlets, or you can call us at 347-826-7448. We have not figured out a cool thing that spells yet, so I'll just give you the numbers again. That's 347-826-7448. You know, let's get right into first last week's picks. And the main reason I want to get into those is I actually did quite well, and I'm pretty happy about it. Going into last week's picks, and I have the updated standings as well. I know you guys were asking about that earlier. Last week, we had Chicago at Atlanta, with Chicago being able to pick up that victory. That was a very entertaining and interesting game to attend, and I'll get into that a little later. Pittsburgh at Cleveland. For some reason, Pittsburgh never got off the bus, and Cleveland ran that one. Dallas with the upset of the season to this point over Seattle in Seattle. I wonder how the 12th men felt about that. And San Francisco was able to roll over St. Louis after St. Louis actually went up 14. Now, you guys both went 2-2, as you got Cleveland and San Francisco. The only one I missed was when I had St. Louis. I had Chicago over Atlanta. I had Cleveland over Pittsburgh. And I had the upset of the century, Dallas over Seattle. So, updated standings. Reggie's still leading with 17-7. Probably still the better option to go with if you're going to take picks right now. Coach is 13-11, and I'm kind of a little bit happier to be here this week at 10-14.
Oh man, you guys are getting close to me. I gotta separate myself again this week.
Like I said, I'm just happy that I went 3-1. I would have went 4-0 had St. Louis not, decided to only play one quarter, but it happens. This week's games, we'll just get right into them. This week, we'll start with New Orleans at Detroit. Who do you have, Coach?
Oh, this is a tough one, but I got to go with New Orleans just because I think Detroit loses. They lose Calvin Johnson for a couple of weeks, and so I got to go with New Orleans going into Detroit winning.
All right, Reggie?
Oh, man, this is also a very, very tough one for me. Missing Calvin Johnson is definitely going to be huge. They're not going to be able to take as much advantage over that defense as they probably would have with him in the picture. But it's Detroit. I'm going to stick with Detroit. I'm going to stick with Detroit. I'm not impressed by New Orleans, so as you would imagine. So I'm going to stick with Detroit tonight.
Yeah, to me, you're missing Calvin. The other options have been okay, but Stafford only likes throwing to Calvin. It's kind of his security blanket, and he seems to be like Lioness and just always wants the blanket around him. Reggie Bush is still dinged up. I don't know if he's going to play. And they put in, George Wynn or somebody Wynn, who just never really got out of the blocks. The Saints are realizing that this division is still wide open, and I think they're going to start trying to separate themselves from the other three teams. So I got New Orleans as well. I don't necessarily think they see blood in the water, but New Orleans realizes that they're not out of this yet. Next game, we're going to go Minnesota at Buffalo. Reggie, who do you have?
I'm going to go with Buffalo on this one. I think Minnesota got exposed last week for the team that they really are. And Buffalo's playing well, and especially at home. So I'm going to take Buffalo.
All right, Coach.
Likewise, I like Buffalo at home right now. I think they have more upside than what Minnesota has to offer right now. I think that's the big piece of it. Depending on what they can and cannot do with Bridgewater, if he even comes back into this game, plays a role. But Buffalo will be hard to beat at home right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you guys. And Kyle Orton has actually given them a decent quarterback option. I'm not gonna say he's amazing, but he's certainly better than EJ Manuel is. So I got Buffalo as well. Next up, Kansas City at San Diego. Now, I personally I've always kind of, I'm not gonna say I was a Phillip Rivers fan. I've always respected his numbers. I feel he's always been underrated because he's never had the weapons for the most part. I think he's got the weapons. He's got a pretty good defense. I got San Diego in this one. Reggie, who do you have?
I'm with you, Jeremy. I'm going to go with San Diego. Those guys are playing extremely well this year. Kansas City is not playing poorly, I should say. I just think that, you know, I like what I've seen out of San Diego so far this year. So I'm going to go with San Diego as well.
All right, Coach.
I like San Diego as well. I think that, you know, they're a tougher team for Kansas City. I think
Yeah, they are actually tied with Dallas right now for the overall best record in the game at 5-1. So I think we're all pretty good on that one. And then finally, we get to this, I hope it's a game. Atlanta at Baltimore. Coach, I'll start with you.
Baltimore.
I have Baltimore as well, and there's a reason I left you for last, Reggie. Who do you have in this one?
Originally, I had spoken with Coach a little bit earlier this week, and I told him that this would probably be the first week ever that I would go against Atlanta. But having read some of the comments from some of the players, notably Roddy White and Julio Jones, I think this is they know that they have to make a statement, nothing else for themselves. And I think this is going to be their statement game. So I'm going to go with Atlanta on this one.
All right. Always respectable. And it's not necessarily, even if there is a week that you don't pick them, don't think of it as you're going against them, as you're just not going for them.
Right.
I mean, that sounds like the same thing, right?
I'll take that one.
All right. I'm about to say, I'm trying to give you an out just in case.
I was going to say, thanks. Oh, Jeremy, thanks. I appreciate that.
I say, remember, I did follow Tampa for many years, so I had to find different ways to say a lot of things. So, but to recap, we all agree that Buffalo and San Diego are going to win their respective games. Reggie has Detroit. We both have me and you, Coach, have New Orleans, and we also have Baltimore. And Reggie thinks the Falcons are going to make a statement on this one. I agree, they're going to make a statement, but I don't think it's the one you're talking about. We'll get into that one a little later.
That's fair enough, Jeremy. I can take that one this week after that madness that you witnessed on Sunday.
Especially when you missed probably one of the better Falcoholics events, the breast cancer event and everything. But I'll talk a little more about that here in a little while. You know, we'll start off this week. There were just a ton of major injuries and stuff going on this week. We won't even get into Cincinnati player Vontaze Burfict. Well, I'll mention it real quick. I don't know if you guys heard this, but tight end for the Panthers, Greg Olsen, reported to NFL.com and practically anybody in the league that would listen to him that in Piles, Mr. Burfict was trying to twist the ankles of Mr. Olsen and one Cam Newton, who just had his surgically repaired. They went back and looked at the tape, saw that there was evidence of this actually happening. The only problem I have with it is the only punishment given out to Burfict is a $25,000 fine. Now, that's a significant amount of money, but to me there should have been a suspension because I feel like he's just going to keep doing this. He has a history all the way back into his college days of getting personal fouls for getting too physical. What do you guys think about this?
Well, from my perspective, again, I'm with you, Jeremy. I was really surprised it was just a $25,000 fine, and then he even has the audacity, from what I understand today, that he's actually appealing the fine when there's clear evidence that this guy does these types of things. The only thing that I can say about it, and I hate to say this about players in general, but it's going to be poetic justice, and justice, you know, the scales have a way of evening themselves out. One thing to note is, and I spoke with Mr. Icky Woods a little bit about this earlier this week, this guy has had several concussions this year. He had another one in that game, and I think he came back from it. And sometimes you wonder, you know, why the scales kind of tilt the way that they do sometimes towards certain players. And I think it's evident. I mean, $25,000. And he gets to appeal it, I'm with you. He should have gotten a massive fine because you just can't you cannot jeopardize somebody's liability for the sake of the game. That's just ultimately ridiculous.
Okay, what I think about most definitely for the rest of the team. I mean, if it's their effort, they're trying to. You know, they speak about discipline all the time. And this, I mean, this is not an emotional, you know, push or shove it in the face. Just things you can't afford to put it on. We're talking about deliberate action. I mean, stop to make like getting grass a little bit. They try to twist and break money. I mean, that's still their back. That's not something that you just like. So, I personally think that.
Yeah, and we apologize for the technical difficulties. We're trying to fix that on Coach's phone, but. Yeah, what he was basically echoing what we were saying is I think to the point of when you're purposely trying to injure people, whether it's because of a head injury or whether you're just kind of being a dirty player, that you may have got away with that in the 70s or 80s, but you can't really get away with that nowadays. And it's just not. I mean, you try to play this game for a lot of the pure reasons and just the competition reasons and. The fact that this guy's trying to play dirty like this, there's almost no room for him in this league, in my opinion.
Absolutely. There's a difference between playing tough and playing dirty. A big difference. I mean, be competitive. Cincinnati's better than that. Their defense is better than that. He's a better player than that. He does not need to resort to that type of madness to gain any advantage. Just play ball. Just play football.
Exactly. Coach, do we have you back on a better line?
Is that better, Jim? Can you hear me now?
Yes, that I can hear you better.
Okay, good.
We'll jump into some of these. We'll go with the offense first on some of these big injuries. Detroit lost Calvin Johnson for a couple weeks at least, their big wide receiver. Also, wide receiver A.J. Green in Cincinnati will be out for a couple games. Running back Darren Sproles for Philadelphia. Victor Cruz for the Giants tore his patella tendon in a non-contact. I mean, I felt for the guy. I mean, I took to Twitter, not that I was trying to get recognition or nothing, but as soon as that happened, I thoughts and prayers out to him because it just – He was kind of screaming and in tears, and I really hope that it's not as bad as it seemed. But also, Cleveland lost their center, who hasn't missed a start his entire career up till now, Alex Mack. Which of these do you guys see as the more significant injuries for these teams?
Well, for me, Calvin Johnson and well, actually, you know what? They are all equally important. They all play such a tremendous role in their team success. I mean, for Cleveland, I watched that game, and I saw, you know, that's their center. That's the guy that caused the protections, as we noted with Atlanta losing our center and the turmoil that could create. I, like you, I felt so badly for Victor Cruz. I have never seen a player so emotional about an injury that we all kind of take for granted because it happens so regularly. And I, too, sent some words out to him as well. But, I mean, Victor Cruz is obviously a big, big target for Eli Manning. Darren Sproles is very instrumental in that Chip Kelly offense. A.J. Green is probably the sole receiver for Cincinnati. Not that, you know, they have to throw it as much, but now teams can now key more on the run and force Andy Dalton, who likes to throw a lot of interceptions. And of course, Calvin Johnson. I mean, you know, the rambling wreck from Georgia Tech. You can't replace that guy's talent and that guy's productivity. So I think they're all equally detrimental to their teams.
I mean, I would have to agree. I think the biggest person that takes the biggest hit here probably is Detroit losing Calvin Johnson. I mean, they have Golden Tate. They have to have some other people step up. But I think all of the injuries are equally important, as Reginald has said. But I think Calvin Johnson's injury and A.J. Green's injury as well to where he is right now with Cincinnati are the biggest loss.
Yeah, I think I could make a case that each one of these mean a good bit to their team. The Giants' offense was just firing up, so the fact that Victor Cruz is out now is going to be a big hole. They do have Odell Beckham Jr., who seems like he could be another Victor Cruz down the road. But, you know, missing Calvin or A.J. or even Sproles is going to hurt those offenses. To me, Alex Mack is the biggest injury of this whole thing because he's going to be out for at least 8 weeks. There's a chance he could come back, but he is the starting center for the Cleveland Browns, who – by far have at least doubled or tripled expectations this year already, and they look quite good. So the fact that the leader of that offense is no longer on the field, it's going to be very hard for them, I think, to keep up the pace they're going. And, you know, we'll just have to see. I hope they continue because the Browns have been a great story. But as we shift to the defensive injuries, some of the key ones here, D. Milliner in New Jersey for the Jets. Danny Trevathan he's a linebacker for Denver, and Gerard Mayo for New England. Now, me personally, I got to say that Gerard Mayo for New England, because their defense has been a lot better than it was in the very beginning, and it usually comes from leadership. Well, this guy is the leader on the defense, and he's the one that always is there to call the plays and protection. So, in the same respect that Alex Mack on offense keeps Cleveland's offense going, I think Gerard Mayo in New England is the one who makes that defense run. So, to me, he's the biggest injury here. Coach, what do you think?
I'd have to agree. I mean, the leadership comes from him. Also with Milner, that's a big hit too, but they have some guys behind him. But they have some big expectations for him this year. So I think both of those guys, but I have to say Mayo by far is the biggest impact.
And guys, I would agree. Gerard Mayo is definitely the bigger impact loss on this. I think the other two teams can recover from those guys' losses, but you know, again, with Milner and with Mayo as well, I think these are like the second major injuries that those guys have had that have taken them out of contention. So, you know, I feel bad for those guys from a career perspective.
Yeah, and the way New England typically does things, that could mean Gerard Mayo may not play another game for them. They may let him walk off into the sunset. Now we get to quite arguably the fun part of this show for sure. As these next two questions, I know we'll get a good debate because me and Coach have already debated this. And I know me and you, Reggie, have debated a couple of these off the show as well. We'll start with, which head coach is going to get relieved of their duties first? Now, I know we've already had, is it Brian Allen? It's Allen, I know, out in Oakland. But who do you think is going to be next on the block? Dennis Allen, that's it.
The person I'm going to take in this, and I'm, I guess if we have to look at coaches in the hot seat, I have to take the coach down in Miami. I think with all that is taking place there, the distractions, the continuum with some things with some players, some key losses right now early, I think he's sitting by far on top of he's the highest in the food chain as of right now.
All right. Reggie, who do you think next?
Well, you know what, I definitely, Miami's coach Philbin was definitely high on my list. I will say this. For me, it would depend on the next 2 weeks. I think that if the Atlanta Falcons go 2-6 at the bye, remember, and I was telling some other guys, remember that Scott Pioli is the assistant general manager, and they also have two former head coaches on staff in Mike Tyson and Mike Nolan. I think that Arthur Blank can't survive a bye week with Mike Smith as the head coach if these guys lose the next two games. So I would say Mike Smith is definitely the next coach to go, depending upon their loss. If they can turn it around, then definitely Philbin, but I got to say Mike Smith right now.
Wow. I see your point, Coach. I actually agree with you, Reggie, but for the sake of us picking on a contest that doesn't mean much, I would say, man, I don't know if there's another one that's going to lose his job soon. I know Rex will make it to the end of the year, but I guess just for the sake of it right now, I'm gonna say Rex Ryan, just because his next job is going to be in a booth somewhere. It's probably going to be on ESPN, and I don't know that all the things in up in the Jets are his fault. I think only about a third of them were caused by him. But I think at least one of us, if not all three of us, could be right. And it's something me and you, Coach, were talking about earlier about Mike Smith, is if going into that bye week they haven't gotten another win or haven't looked better than they do, I think Mike Smith is going to drive his Ford to another tailgate.
Yeah, much like Rex Ryan, Jeremy, I don't believe that everything is Mike Smith's fault. I think Thomas Dimitroff takes a great deal of credit in what we've seen over the years. But to have replaced two sets of coordinators already, or a set of coordinators twice in his tenure, I just don't see it past the bye week. If they go 2-6 in the bye, I think that's the end of Mike Smith.
Yeah, and to for lack of a better example, for all of our pop music fans out there as well, or our fans who enjoy some pop music or country, at this point, Mike Smith is like Taylor Swift. After so many times of blaming the people around you and replacing the people around you, at some point they're going to think maybe you're the X factor and maybe you're the problem.
Absolutely. Great analogy, Jeremy.
I'm glad somebody else understood it. I had to explain it to a 10-year-old earlier, and it just I figured they were the ones listening to this.
You just got to play them the song sometimes, Jerry.
I try not to personally play Taylor Swift, but that's my own personal choice. you know, let's get into our next big debate here, or since that wasn't much of a debate, I think we all agree. I sent out something to you guys earlier to finish this sentence, and Coach, I'll start with you. The best division in the NFL is?
The NFC West.
And why do you think that?
Because when you look at all of the other divisions and you look at those teams that make up the division, as I looked and I combed through this very meticulously, guys, that is the only division where you've had probably most recently Super Bowl winners or contenders when you look at it in a five-year stretch or range. When you look at Super Bowls, you're talking about although St. Louis is not playing well, they've been in Super Bowls. They played in them and they won one, lost one. We look at Seattle, they won one. San Francisco, multiples. Was San Francisco in there? I'm trying to remember because I don't have it right in front of me.
It's been a while. Yeah, they do have five.
Okay, so again, when you're looking at all of those teams, and Arizona has been in one in most recent years as well. That division is why I picked it when you look at it across the board. They have the contenders. They have been consistent in playoff appearances and wins and Super Bowls.
All right, Reggie, who do you have?
Initially, it was a toss-up between the NFC West and the NFC East. And I went with the NFC East, and I went with them because you've got Philadelphia, who's definitely holding their own. You've got the surprising Dallas Cowboys, who marched into Seattle, an NFC West team, and beat them at home, something that hasn't been done in, I believe, two seasons or at least a season. You've got the New York Giants, who are now starting to figure out that West Coast offense, and they're starting to turn it around. The Washington is 1-5, but I think that once the Washington franchise commits to Kirk Cousins, I think you're going to see those guys start to pile up a couple of wins as well. So when I look at overall total, I would have to go with the NFC East.
And I like both those answers. And I've always been an NFC West fan, at least in the last couple of years, because you have four possible playoff teams. I think if all the injuries didn't hit St. Louis, I believe they'd be right in the hunt too. Clearly the NFC East, just because of the Eagles and the Cowboys dueling out right now and just two great teams. The Giants emerging, the Redskins, like you said, when they commit, I think you're going to be a way better team. But, I mean, right now, for my money, I like the AFC North. And the reason I like the AFC North is they are the only division where everybody is 500 or better. The Steelers are 3-3, the Browns are 3-2, Baltimore is 4-2, and the Bengals are 3-1-1. And on another show, I'll get into why ties are just ridiculous in football. But the fact that all these guys are 500 or better, even though they've played each other a majority of the time, to me, they've got to be the best. The Bengals are trying to hang on to the top spot. The Ravens are always trying to steal it or get into a wild card. And suddenly, the Browns have been on top of things. I mean, the Steelers could put together a win streak. Any of these four teams could legitimately make the playoffs the way they're playing, even though the Steelers have issues. But I think we made three good arguments, and if any of our listeners have a different take or agree with us, feel free to hit us up on Twitter at 3endzone, at TheImpact99 if you want to send it directly to me. Reggie, I don't want to missay yours again.
ATLEN73.
That's it. I almost said 83, but yeah. Which, oddly enough, I don't have their music queued up this week. I feel bad. But, if you want to debate it with us, feel free to call in 347-826-7448. If you call in and we've already covered what you want to talk about, let us know. We'll easily go back to it and talk about it. This show, you know, is for you guys as much as it is for us. If you feel like your voice is not heard other places, we want you to come on here and say what you want to say. If, you know, we do have a dump button, if you can't keep it, you know, PG, PG-13-ish, you know, do keep in mind some very virgin ears do listen to us at times. But, I think we made some pretty good arguments there. And, you know, only time will tell.
We're the greatest show out there going on right now, guys.
Exactly. We are the outcast of radio right now, I believe.
I like that. I like that.
I like it.
Because not only are we sneaky good, but, you know, we got the skills to back it up. And that's how I've always felt Outkast is. So.
Absolutely. Spell with a K, not with a C.
Exactly. And the bad thing is there's only two main members of that group, so we can't say who would be who in that group. And,
well,
that
I could be the DJ. I'm good with that.
Okay. Well then, which one would Coach Hill be then, in your opinion, Reggie?
I think Coach Hill it would be Andre Benjamin, and that's he's Andre 3000. He's the guy that brings the analytical. He's the king of the double entendre, if you will. And Big Boy is just the guy that just brings it. He's the trendsetter. He's the setter. He's the tone setter, and that will represent Jeremy the Impact York.
I will definitely take that. But not only that, but Andre 3000 wears so many visible hats, and given Coach's track record and career history, I think as many hats as he's wore, he's definitely Andre.
Oh, absolutely. He could definitely cross the lines. That's for sure.
Coach, are you okay with that assessment?
I am. That is, I am honored to be quite frank.
Now, if we could only get Outkast on the show, we'll have our guys reach out to them and see if they'd like to come on, because I know they're big Atlanta fans as well. They follow all the teams, them or Seven Dust for sure. I know always do. Maybe we'll try to get them on soon. But the last few, we just got a few news and notes to finish up End Zone, and we'll jump right into Falcon Zone, because I think that's where our audience is really waiting to hear that battle. I know one of the last things I wanted to hit on was watching the Cincinnati game, and I was actually able to watch it at a tailgate as I was walking into the stadium. Jeremy Hill of the Cincinnati Bengals scored a touchdown, and he did a very quick version, but he still did his own version of the Icky Shuffle, the tribute to Icky Woods. And when they ask Icky about it, you know, obviously friend of the show, Icky Woods, it was on a couple weeks ago, he was running the concession stand that he does for the Javonte Woods Foundation for his son that unfortunately passed away. And he said, yeah, he was a little quick on it, but, you know, he got the point of it, and I appreciate the gesture. You guys able to see this?
Yeah, I was able to catch it. And I actually texted Icky right after I saw it on one of the highlight shows, and he kind of mimicked some of the same comments that you made. I think it's great for Icky. I really do. I was happy for him, and I told him it's happened. Again, I appreciate Coach Hill for making that introduction when I went up on my trek to Cincinnati, the Paul Brown Stadium, to watch the Falcons lose to them that year, that game. But at any rate, he was also on Inside the NFL this week as their special guest on the couch. And a lot of great things are starting to happen for him. He was able to talk about the Javonte Woods Foundation. Myself and another acquaintance of mine here are in the process of setting up a fundraiser golf tournament on behalf of the Javonte Woods Foundation, where we're going to get Icky down and we're going to get you guys out there and we're going to have a good time in the name of this charity. But I'm just so pleased and so happy for him. He's a great guy. He's a very humble guy. And I'm just happy for him.
Likewise, I feel the same way, Reggie. I think that it's a great opportunity for him. I'm so happy that he was able to come onto our show. We were able to also promote the foundation. He has a lot of great things going, and I'm just so happy that Jeremy Hill did what he did, because it not only spoke volume to the type of personality and the type of person that he is, but it said a lot being a running back that he did that for him at home in their space.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that he was able to reach out, like I said, and I swear there was something else I was going to say, but the information for the Javonte Woods Foundation, we're going to post up a little bit later on this evening on our on all of our pages, so that you guys can go, if nothing else, it's just to help raise awareness for the foundation and the fact that you know, asthma is still a pretty big problem in this country, and he had staggering stats when he was on that week. It's just something we need to raise awareness to, especially with a lot of these kids that are playing sports nowadays.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, just a super duper guy, man. Never a guy that you can walk up to and he's gonna shun you. He knows that, he knows his work, he knows where he counts, he knows he's an icon in the game. But he still addresses everyone that I've ever seen. He addresses them as if he's their family member, and that's something I really like about him.
Likewise, I agree with the resident. He's very approachable, very humble, very friendly.
And we do have a couple minutes left, so we'll try to hit some of these other stories that have come out recently. The main story, you know, we talked, Coach, you talked about that the NFC West is the best division in your opinion. And, you know, let's talk about the quarterback situation with the Arizona Cardinals. You know, right now, Carson Palmer was the starter. He pinched a nerve, I believe, that's kind of gave him some trouble. So they brought in Drew Stanton, the former Michigan State Spartan, who also got knocked out of a game. They ended up going to, I can't think of his name, but who do you think gives them the best chance to win out there?
If healthy, Carson Palmer for sure. But the question is he going to, you know, with this type of injury, is he going to be able to bounce back? And if so, can he be consistent with doing so? So, I mean, by far, if they can get him back, he gives them a better chance.
You know what, Jeremy? I got to go with Drew Stanton on this one. I found it, and I'm going to use a very comical reason for this. As I sifted through my fantasy football league looking for stragglers to pick up, I noticed that Larry Fitzgerald, who is probably one of the most prolific wide receivers that we've seen in a long time, is still an undrafted player. And that speaks volumes. I think that overall Drew Stanton gives them the better chance if healthy. I still think that's where Arizona's Achilles heel is right now. They've got to find that guy that can not only give them the chance to win, but that can stay healthy. That has been their issue for a while. I know they went with Kevin Cobb some years ago, and that didn't work out. But they have never really had that guy, and I think they need that guy. I think that's what puts them over the top.
Yeah, not since Kurt Warner a couple years ago, who was able to take over for a failing Matt Leinart and take him to a Super Bowl. And before that, probably the next best quarterback they've had is probably Jake the Snake Plummer at that point. Third string guy is Logan Thomas out of Virginia Tech. I finally found that stat. I've never been the world's biggest Carson Palmer fan, even though he's kind of the Phillip Rivers. I'm not necessarily a fan, but I've always respected what he did. And he's been put in some bad situations. I don't know that he's ever been on a truly amazing team. This may be one of the better ones he's been on, and that includes when he played with Ocho Cinco up in Cincinnati. Reggie, I got to go with you. For now, I like Drew Stanton better. It's just Carson Palmer's almost to the end of the ride anyway, and hopefully this doesn't sideline him. But I think Drew Stanton gives you the best chance to win. And if he falters, I believe Logan Thomas, with enough seasoning, maybe by next year, could start to emerge as maybe that guy for him.
I would agree. I love their coach. I love Bruce Arians. I think he's the best coach for them. I think they've built a tremendous defense. And I think they've got some offensive pieces. If they can, and obviously their running back is starting to emerge as well. I think quarterback is where they're missing. I mean, they've got to go get a guy that can be that guy. I think if they get that, you're going to see Arizona be very competitive over the next few years, extremely competitive.
Yeah, and do you guys have anything else to add?
No, I think we're good. I'm good.
No, I think that we've kind of covered it all as of right now. I'm excited about getting ready to get in the Falcon zone because I've got a couple of things.
Oh, yeah. So as we slowly wind down end zone here, I just want to tell the listeners that the three of us will slowly go back to our corners. We'll sit on the stools, spit out the mouthpiece, swish some water around, and we're going to come out swinging in this next episode, or this next Falcon Zone. And we're not going to swing at each other. We're going to swing at the people who deserve to be swung at this point. But for the coach, Haywood Hill, and Mr. Reggie Walker, I am Jeremy York. We'll see you guys in a few minutes. Right, at least as far as the song is concerned, Falcons on top, and to most in Atlanta, they still are. Hello, I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by Mr. Reggie Walker and the coach, Haywood Hill. How we doing, guys?
I'm doing great, Jeremy.
Doing outstanding, Jeremy.
As we said, we have come out of our perspective corners. Gloves are on, mouthpiece is back in. We're going to get into some pretty good stuff, and you know, for the faint at heart, you know, bear with us. Maybe you should sit down for this. But things we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about that Bears and Falcons game on Sunday. We're going to put on the head coaching hat here in a few minutes. Talk about the injuries. We'll give our report card so far through the first six games and tell you where we think they're going in the next. We'll preview the game on the Ravens, and you just never know what's going to happen from that point. Who knows? You always want to tune in. You never know who's going to call in. That's not any kind of foreshadowing. In fact, if you want to be that person to call in, 347-826-7448 is the number. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll just get right into it. That game against the Bears, and I think that's a good title for it. That game. You know, what were you guys' overall take on that game? Just kind of the brief synopsis so far.
Well, I can give you a very brief synopsis. Horrible.
Okay.
Extremely horrible. I have not seen a team so removed. I have not seen a team that was completely – we go back to Hard Knocks, and we talk about the theme of Hard Knocks when Atlanta was on this year, and it was about getting tougher. I think Chicago exposed the fact that Atlanta is still no longer a tough team. I think people got hit. I think Chicago brought the pain. They brought the energy. And they took those guys out of the game from day one, from the beginning, from the onset. They tried to catch up a little bit, but I think what happened is, and I'll talk about this a little bit later on if I get the opportunity, I think the mirage was exposed. The mirage was exposed.
For myself, it was tough to watch. It was painful to watch. Atlanta basically got outmatched, got outcoached, got out physically played. They did not execute well, and they flat out got out tough. I mean, Chicago came into Atlanta with an agenda, and it got served. And I think that even down to the fan, it was kind of like, where were you playing? Were you playing in the Dome, or were you playing in Chicago? I mean, all the way around, they lost all the way around. They lost in all three phases of the game, and they also lost in the stands with the fans, which was unbelievable, but they did.
Oh, yeah, it very much. You know, the Falcons have played good at home the other two times they were there and not played very good on the road. It very much felt like a road game where it was, I would say, 65-35 Bears fans to Falcons fans. And I do think that played a little bit of a part to it. But it just seemed like, for the most part, the team was, as you said, Reggie, just very disinterested, like they didn't even want to be there. And the crowd felt that from the very beginning. And, you know, except for the few Anton Smith highlights, really, for the most part, the fans were turned it into a regular Sunday church meeting almost. It's hanging out and enjoying being around each other as opposed to watching the game.
Yeah, well, I unfortunately, was watching it from a golf trip, an annual golf trip that me and my guys have. I was watching it on my laptop, believe it or not, on my DirecTV NFL network because it wasn't a local game being in the Carolinas. The Panthers game was. But I just couldn't believe what I was watching. I saw a regression. I expected those guys to come out energized. We at home. This is where we win. This is where we do what we do. And I saw quite the opposite. I saw the worst game that they played this year. Personally, that was absolutely the worst game that they played this year.
I couldn't disagree, Reginald. I think that the one thing that they were able to hang their hats on and believe in was the home wins, and that got basically stripped from them with Chicago. It's a huge question mark over the Atlanta Falcons right now, and they better find some answers very quick to their situation.
And that's just it, you know. And I know, Jeremy, you're going to delve into that a little bit more. But I realize, even as a lifelong fan, and I say lifelong from the age of, up until the age of about 7 or 8, I was a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. I was a big I used to think I was Lynn Swan, by the way. So I was a big Steelers fan up until about 7 when I realized that we actually had a team. But this was the first time that I was able to really look back and take a step back out of my fan, from underneath my fan hat, and really see my team for what it really was. And I realized that we just aren't what we think we are. And it was depressing. It really was, to realize just how far we are away, whether it's personnel, whether it's coaching, whether it's scheme, whatever all of the excuses and the reasons that have been thrown out over the past week have been, to realize that this team is not just one piece away. We are a lot away, and it starts with attitude. I mean, attitude just was horrible, and disposition was horrible. It reminded me, guys, of the Cincinnati game, and I told you guys off air, you know, that what I saw and witnessed from the first row of that stadium and the sideline, and realized that there was just a lot of untrust, distrust between the team, between the players on the team, and I don't know how you fix that. I just don't know. So it's going to be a long road, Falcon fans, because they've got some big issues to fix, and it's not just surface issues.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree there I don't know where everybody kind of got on the bandwagon this year that things were that different from last year, or that they were only one or two pieces away. I still saw them. I mean, even in the draft, I thought they did well in the draft. I thought they had a pretty solid one, but most of the people they picked up, I saw as backups or third strings, at least for the upcoming year, maybe even special teams players, which is what a lot of them, you know, have become. But, I mean, these guys, they weren't ready to be pros yet, and because of injuries or because of lack of talent at a lot of these positions, or just, you know, sometimes bad coaching decisions, they were put in these leadership roles, and they just weren't ready for them.
Well, you know what, Jeremy, you mentioned that, and I think that's the argument that I've made for the ousting of Mike Smith, if nothing else. is, you know, across the league, if you draft players, your job is to develop players. And Anton Smith is a great example on the positive end in that, you know, here's a guy that every time he touches the ball, he goes to the house, and then you never see him again. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say, hey, this guy makes a notable impact. Get him involved. I cringe every time I hear, well, the coaching staff hasn't figured out how to get this guy involved. It's simple. Give him the ball. There's nothing more simple than give the guy the ball. And that, to me, that just goes back to the head coach. It's apparent that he does not like rookies. He likes veterans, whether it's being forced upon him or not. It has been his card. And he doesn't develop his team. So, I mean, even down to the offensive line. Everybody, oh, the offensive line played horribly. Well, guess what? You got three new offensive guys that you had the same issue that you had last year when you replaced those offensive linemen. They weren't conditioned, and they got their behinds handed to them in the second half. Same thing happened in the New York Giants game. But if you have a regular rotation where you're getting those guys in and they're getting the snaps and they're getting conditioned and they're getting all these things that make them game ready, then you don't run into these issues. And to me, that just goes back to the head coach. I think he's lost the team. You see a lot of bickering and arguing on the sidelines now, even back to the Cincinnati game. And I think that is why Arthur Blank has to make the decision. If he's going to get my PSL, he's going to have to get rid of this guy.
Well, and you know what? As you know, we kind of talked about enough of this game, so to say, and since it's part of a discussion we had earlier, Coach, let's get into this Anton Smith discussion, and I'll let you go ahead and take over from here.
Okay, here's my take. As I've said time and time again, I have been a great fan of Anton Smith. I talked about it even as early as last year when he emerged in the Miami game. One thing that's interesting about this young man is that every time he gets into the game, he makes an impact. I think right now he leads the team as a scorer at all positions. Again, I think that he is the leader of the Falcons, quietly. And I think where the chemistry and the camaraderie is being lost is the fact that he's not in the game. And other players see this, even the ones that are high-dollar players. Why is this guy not playing? I mean, it behooves me as to why he's not in the game, but it's evident that when he's in the game, he makes an impact. And you have to lean on something other than now, your home games, which is what you're hanging your hat on. But Anton Smith is a guy that's got to get in this mix. He is the quiet leader of this team. The team is quietly petitioning for him to play. And I think if you put him into the rotation to make him that feature back, you have now the element that you need to turn things around, because as a player, I think they feel, and as a team, they feel that if this guy's contributing every week and not getting the shot, why should I care to do even more than that?
And exactly. Jeremy, if I could quickly add to Coach Hill's point, Zach Klein from WSB put out a tweet just the other day. He mentioned that Anton Smith has more touchdowns than Dez Bryant, Rob Gronkowski, Matt Forte, Demaryius Thomas, Jamal Charles, Julio Jones, and Jimmy Graham. I mean, enough said.
Yeah, by far. And getting into some of his stats as I was looking at them earlier, so far as rushing attempts, he was not given any whatsoever in the Cincinnati game, but the other five games so far, he's got two carries against New Orleans, four against Tampa, four against Minnesota, one against New York Giants, and two against Chicago. Now, let's see. As far as receptions, he has one against New Orleans. He had two against Cincinnati. He had none in Tampa, none against Minnesota, three against the Giants, and four against Chicago. And he's also scored a touchdown in four straight games up to right now. In fact, I've got him on two fantasy teams just because he always scores. He does currently have five touchdowns, I believe. I think he's got two rushing and three receiving. Yeah, he does, against New Orleans. I mean, it just baffles me that not only is he third on your depth chart, according to AtlantaFalcons.com, but, yeah, that stat that Zach threw out, and I like a lot of things Zach says. I think he's one of the definite good media members in Atlanta because he's not afraid to say things. I mean, I don't know how you can deny that your third-string running back, who is getting looks like about four touches a game between receptions and carries, he scored a touchdown in five of the six games he's played in, including four in a row. I don't know why he's not the starter at this point.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I will tell you this, and this has been a concern for me and a lot of real fans, and I'll get into that a little bit later too, but I was glad to see that Arthur Blank released a statement today because for those who don't know, Anton Smith is in his contract year, and Atlanta has been notorious for allowing players, good players, to get away, go to some other team, and then shine. I mean, Brett Favre is probably the greatest example of that. But that being said, Arthur Blank made a statement today that says that Anton Smith represents the type of team player that he wants on his team and that he expects Anton Smith to be a Falcon for a very long time. So I was glad to hear that because that lets me know that at least Arthur Blank and the franchise is committed to keeping this guy on board, because it would be a travesty to let him go somewhere else and become the guy that we think he is.
Well, and I hope he does that, but I hate to categorize it as this, but a term I like to use is, that sounds like a winning lottery ticket. I'll believe it when I see it. And for Arthur to say that, I believe it a lot more than if Dimitrov or Smith had said it. And I hope that moving forward he realizes what he has in Anton Smith. But, I mean, I just, like I said, just it baffles me that he would have such limited touches and yet he's scoring almost every time he's in the game, on like every third play he's in, and yet he's just not in the game.
Well, one thing I'd like to add to that, guys, if you don't mind, and I will say this quickly. Once an owner speaks, it's almost like writing in stone, okay? That means he will be there next year. It's not a matter of if he's going to be there. He will be there next year. If Mr. Blank has said it, he writes everybody's checks. At the end of the day, he is the boss. He's made it very clear that Mr. Smith has a uniform in Atlanta expected.
Like I said, I definitely hope so, because he's just, I mean, he is one of the few bright spots this year. And it's not that other guys aren't trying or anything, but, I mean, the thing that I saw in that game, and since I was at the game, I had the in-person view, so I didn't always see every up-close thing, but it just looked like I said, the players are just so disinterested, and they almost aren't behind Matt Ryan to a point. It seemed like the receivers didn't want to catch it because they were being left out to dry. They were getting just smashed by these passes that he was leaving too far up, and it was exposing them to these big hits. And, I mean, after a while, I kind of don't blame them for letting a few go.
Well, yeah, there were a couple that he let go, but quite frankly, there were a couple that hit him right in the hands, and they dropped him.
Yeah.
And we're talking about guys like Julio Jones, who's going to be expecting a monster payday next year. You're dropping catches you're supposed to make. You're supposed to be one of the top tier wide receivers in the league. Make the catch. Point blank. So I do agree that Matt kind of flies him, but again, like I told another guy, when you've got a turnstile for an offensive line and you're getting chased by 300-pound defensive tackles, you got to do something. And we can't continue to put it on Matt. Not this year.
Oh, by far, he's still playing like an MVP to a point. I mean, this week, if you throw this week out, he's still playing with a purpose, like he's still trying to carry the team. But if the team doesn't believe in each other, I think we're almost. I hope it doesn't go into the situation it was last year, where they stopped really believing in the same things and it just went south. I hope they can put it together at this point, because they do have a little bit different personnel. It'll be interesting to see who kind of evolved as the leader to this point.
Well, here's my concern with Matt Ryan. I think Matt likes to play safe. I never personally liked Matt Ryan as a quarterback, not even when he was at Boston College, but that's just my personal opinion. I think that here's his scenario. In that game, as I looked at it, he held onto the ball way too long. I do agree that there were some plays, Reggie, that the tight end should have made. There were some plays that Julio should have made. There were some plays Roddy White should have made. But you open it up when you start talking about the trust factor. How often is he getting the ball? When is he delivering that ball? And at what time is that ball making an impact to the receiver? And I think that's where the problem comes in. There's a time in which you should throw the ball, and then there's a time in which you throw the ball. And I think that's where this confusion and some of this disgruntledness is coming from. I mean, there were a lot of plays, and again, you don't see it on the television version as much as you see it in the game. And then when you're in the game, you have to know what you're looking at. There are times when that separation is clearly there and the ball should have been there versus when he released the ball and, you know, allowing the safety to come back over the top to recover or the corner to come across the field and make a play. So those are some of the things, too, as well as they know that Matt Ryan is not going to step up in those A-gaps and deliver it like that. He doesn't want to face a linebacker. He's gone through that when he went through the thing with San Francisco in that game a couple of years ago, and that kind of spooked him. And so as I look at his demeanor, as I look at him as the leader of this team, whether he wants to be that or not, that's what he's identified as, he has to also step up and say, hey, this is what I'm going to do better, and what can I do to improve it with my receiving core? Because right now, Anton Smith is all that you guys have, and it's evident he's the only thing that you have right now. That's trusting what's happening on the field.
Well, and here's a staggering stat on Anton that I just found. Thanks to our wonderful stat guy here. Anton Smith has as many receiving touchdowns as Julio Jones, 3, and as many rushing touchdowns as Steven Jackson, 2, who are basically he's tied for the lead in both categories.
And that's with less carries. I mean, come on. It's not rocket science at some point. It's common sense.
Oh, yeah. He's got 13 rushing attempts to Steven Jackson, 69. And he has, let's see, Julio has 44 receptions, and he has 10. So pretty much he has a quarter of the touches that the people he's tied with have.
Wow. Can't keep looking to your analogy earlier, Jeremy. It's a lottery ticket. A lottery ticket that you're allowing to sit on the counter, and you just can't keep doing it. For whatever the behind the scenes and talking with Coach Hill a lot, you know, we understand that there are things behind the scenes that the fans and the media doesn't get to see that deter them one way or the other. But I think Mike Smith's run out of excuses now. No one can see what the issue is at this point. God scores a touchdown, you don't see him anymore the rest of the game. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it definitely is. And as we're kind of on these issues, we'll transition into our next big focus. And that was a question I had posed to you guys earlier this week. What would you do differently if you were the head coach? You know, one to three decisions you would make that are different from how they've done things. Coach, we'll start with you.
Thank you for starting with me, guys. A couple of things. The first thing I would do is I would change everything. Practice times, meeting times, everything would change. I think Atlanta is a huge distraction. It is the new Hollywood of the South. And with all of the celebrities that you have here, all of the events that are taking place, I think that Atlanta is a distraction, and I think that you have to have a certain type of player that can come into a city like Atlanta and survive it, first and foremost. So I think it has been very mundane. I think it's been very robotic in some of the things they're probably doing internally. And I think you just change all of that. I think that's where you start first. One of the things I would look at is the defense. One of the things I would most definitely want to look at defensively is what the defensive philosophy should be. And there are a couple of things I'd like to point to. First of all, the knowledge. Is this personnel or this group, are they getting the knowledge? Do they understand what the defense, what the plays are designed to do? And do they really know that versus just going through the motions of them? The skill, again, this leans toward personnel. What are you doing at the skill set? Am I seeing a lot of this work in individuals as it progresses to team? Is the skill level really there for a lot of these players? Awareness. This is a whole team concept. Is there an awareness? Is there a sense of urgency in what we're doing as professionals? Anticipation on the field.
Are we so knowledgeable in what we're doing that we know how to anticipate certain things? Again, judgment. Are we making good, sound judgmental decisions when it comes to our personnel, when it comes to our organization, when it comes to our draft, when it comes to our front office? I mean, all of this plays a role in what we're doing, and I'm just putting it up on the defense as a thing. When I look at the players as individuals, I'm looking at who is actively searching for the ability to be a starter. Again, we continue to mention Anton Smith as that person. He actively searches for that. Not only does he go out and score a touchdown, but then he turns right back around on special teams and is the first guy down there to make the tackle. That's someone actively searching for employment in this league. Okay? With the defense, I got to go back to that too, as well as the offense, situational awareness. If you're 3rd and 5, why are you throwing the ball 17 yards down the field in traffic? That kind of stuff. If it's 3rd and 3 against our opponent's offense, why are you sitting your linebackers at 10 yards and giving up the free first down? Situational awareness of things that you're looking for. And space management. It was horrible in that game against Chicago. Again, I spoke of how deep the linebackers were. I'm talking about busted coverages in zone, space management on the field, whether it's offense or defense. Are we running to the skip stick to get the first down? Matt Ryan, will you step up and get the 5 yards like you did in week 3? Some of those things are all of the things that I looked at from an organizational standpoint, and it all trickles down. If there's no discipline there, if there's no trust there, if there's no compromising there, then this is what you end up with at the end, guys.
All right, Reggie, if you want to go ahead with your head coaching decisions.
I only got one, Jeremy. I make it very simple. Let your coaches do their job. Simple. Let the coaches do your job. Take your handcuffs off your coaches. Let them coach and do their jobs. And everything that Coach Hill just echoed.
I was about to say, I think both of you are dead on point. And as far as what I would do, it goes back to my first thing. It goes back to the wide receiver scheme that I said. Clearly, Levine Toilolo is a very good blocker, as he's also played the offensive line this year, but the kid just can't catch. I don't think he could catch a cold. And that's no real knock on him. It's just, you know, clearly, I mean, Bear Pascoe's the same way. He's a great blocker. He's never been a great receiver. So instead of running a tight end set, run a 4-receiver set. You want to put Julio on one side. You want to put Devin Hester on the other. They are your fast, deep threats. They can get down the sideline. You put Roddy and anybody in the middle. I was going to say Harry Douglas, he's injured. I was going to say Drew Davis, he's injured. So Eric Weems, at this point, whoever wants to play the slot, and you put those for those Tony Gonzalez yards, as I like to call them, in the middle. You run crossing patterns. There's all kinds of fun things you can do. We've all played Madden. We know about that. My second decision is Anton Smith is my starter, and it starts there, and pretty much he's going to have majority of the carries as far as I'm concerned. And then the other thing that has just absolutely baffled me with this is every time I flip on the television, I've got where I look, or every Falcons game on TV, I look for one player to see if he's dressed out, because so far all he's done is hand Gatorade to people, and if you're going to feature him and talk about him as much as you did on Hard Knocks, I don't understand why Tyler Starr has never been outside of street clothes on a sideline. At some point, if you're not getting any pass rush, the defensive line can block, but the linebackers aren't making it through, so it's time for the defensive line to do something. If it hasn't worked to this point or is not super effective, why not put another personnel guy in there and try him? It can't get any worse. Put Tyler Starr in, see what he can do.
I mean, and Jeremy, that you just said it. See what you've got. You've got Jock Smith sitting on your practice squad. The guy's an animal from the linebacker's position. He's on your practice squad. It can't get any worse. You said it best. See what you've got in those guys. Don't keep holding on to them or let them go, which is even worse. Some other team picks them up and they become a stud.
Yep, and I'm afraid that could happen. They're so deep at certain positions that they've stockpiled them, and I mean, I'm surprised Anton Smith has made it to the main roster. He should be on somebody else's roster at this point, and hopefully they're able to hang on to him for that point. But you know, like we've told everybody, if you have something else to say and you feel like you're not being heard, then by all means Call us 347-826-7448. We will listen to everything you say, and hopefully the powers that be in the Falcons organization are as well. We'd love to hear from you. I mean, because that's part of why we do this show, is we're trying to tell the entire story, because a lot of times with certain other places, you're just going to get kind of a political view based off of who their affiliations are. We're not affiliated with anybody, so we can pretty much tell you the entire story. You know, some of the injuries so far. We got Jake Matthews is kind of dinged up with his ankle. He may be okay. It seems like he's just going to play through that. Prince Chimbo with his knee. I'm not calling Prince out for faking this, but I'll call it the phantom knee injury. I watched the entire game. I watched three or four times where he supposedly hurt it. I haven't seen where he hurt it yet. I figure maybe he slipped in the shower or something, and you know, not even trying to be comical. I never saw what he did to his knee, and they won't ever say anything about it. Maybe he's just, you know, trying to find a way out of practice, as some people do. Harry Douglas with his foot seems like it's going to keep him out a couple more weeks, and Drew Davis should be set to return pretty soon. What do you guys think about the Matthews or Chimbo injury?
Well, for the Jake Matthews injury, I think it was legitimate. I think, again, he came in as a cocky kid, as rightfully so, based on his bloodline. And I think Jerry Allen misused him. I think he got some good training out of that, and I'm okay with that. I think that just comes with being a rookie. From a Prince Chimbo perspective, I will tell you, Jeremy, it goes back to my earlier statement, let your coaches coach. I wonder how much of that was really Prince Chimbo being hurt or Prince Chimbo being held back, if you will. He had the green dot. I told you guys there were some pictures that surfaced that had him with the green dot calling the plays. But how much of that is Mike Smith going, I'm not putting a rookie out there. We're not going to start a rookie. And this guy being, you know, this phantom injury, if you will, just to appease the fans by saying now, yeah, he's the starter. But then when it's game time decision, the guy's getting held to the side. I don't believe that Prince Chimbo is ducking the game. I think that guy wants to play. I think he knows he can make an impact no different than O.C. Umanyora, who, you know, even in his late game, the one thing I can say is the guy wants to be out there. And from what I understand, he had a very, very serious tirade on the sidelines because he wanted to be in the game and had to be calmed down by coaches and players alike, because you've got a head coach who just has an agenda. He has an agenda, and his players aren't responding, and I think that's the case with Prince Chimbo.
All right, Coach.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can't disagree. I think until you see all of your personnel, because you have gone through this long, tedious process of drafting these guys, acquiring them aggressively in free agency, you have to play everybody. And I think the one thing that the Falcons have in their possession that is working and has proven to work is a running back by committee. I think all positions need to be by committee at this point. You have the injuries there. You have the practice players there. You have the backups there. You don't need to wait until you lose a key and or critical player in your offensive line or defensive line or your receiving core or your defensive backs, for that matter, before you find out what a player can do.
Absolutely.
I think you do a healthy rotation. You get everybody into the game. They don't have to play long. They just need to see the speed. They just need to know that they're on that sideline and they're going to get in and they're going to have to produce. I think that's where the problem with Atlanta ultimately lies, and the micromanaging. I do see some of that. I do agree that if you go back and look at the coordinators that Atlanta has had under the helm of Mike Smith, you see that all of those guys who have moved on are moving up. They're not only moving on, but they're moving up. And I think that speaks volumes as well. And I think all of these things are things that, in the ownership of Mr. Brink, he can't deny these things. These are things that he has to look at critically. And I think this is the thing that basically brought Dimitrov off the pedestal, to be quite honest with you. I think when you look at Anton Smith, you look at the drafting of Julio Jones, who's not been healthy one full season that he's been in the NFL. And now he's coming off of that rookie contract, looking at a bigger contract. I think all of these things have played into the down spiraling of the general manager and the head coach. And now, you know, as they get ready to move toward the bye week, and this Baltimore game is going to be very critical. If they don't win Baltimore, I think it's over. Personally, I just think it's over.
Yeah, and sorry, go ahead, Reggie.
No. I was just going to echo Coach's statements. I remember when that trade, Coach, you and I had a very in-depth conversation when they traded up for Julio Jones, and I speak to that. And, Jeremy, first of all, I would say I think Harry Douglas probably fits the description that you mentioned as it relates to Prince Shimbo as somebody that's just trying to, you know, duck out of the seat. Hey, if he's out with a foot injury, he's been out 3 weeks, just say he's out. I mean, if you don't want to come back, don't come back. But at any rate, I remember us having this conversation about Julio Jones and that trade, and I remember you saying it took a lot for them to convince Arthur Blank to go with that trade. That's a lot to give up for one player, and they had to be sure, and they hinged their jobs on this guy. And am I saying that Julio Jones is not a good player? Absolutely not. What I'm saying is he was not worth 5 picks that we gave up for him. And I think that now that's going to be the death nail for these two guys.
Yeah, I think so too. That's always going to be one of the biggest stains on the carpet, so to say. As we get into the last few minutes here, we've got a little over 12 minutes left, it looks like. I'm going to swap to the part we were talking about earlier, where we're going to kind of give out our report card for these first 6 games, and then we'll kind of give our projections for about the next 4 games, and I'll read out those 4 games in a minute. But I know me personally, as much as we've talked about all the things they've done right and things they've done wrong up to this point, I say if I got to give them a letter grade, I got them right around I got them C-minus area. I don't quite want to give them a D or an F yet. They've done some good things. Matt Ryan is still playing like an MVP. But for the most part, I give them the C-minus. I think they've just underperformed at all the levels that we thought that they had fixed in the offseason. What do you guys think?
Well, Jeremy, I'm going to defer to Coach Hill and let him give his assessment because – I feel a walk the line coming on here, so I'll give my assessment in my walk the line. How's that?
Okay, well, Coach, we'll throw it to you, and then we'll let Reggie walk the line.
Okay, I'm giving them a D+, and I know that's being very critical, and the reason why I say that is it goes back to the Julio Jones pick, the 5 picks they gave up, how they've struggled with that since then. I'm also looking at Matt Ryan, who I think is about worth half that money as of right now. I don't see him as a $100 million quarterback in the top 5, leading teams back. I think when he plays from behind, as long as they're 10 or 14 points behind, he plays with that sense of urgency because he knows then at that point it's not really on his shoulder. But if it has to go down to score a touchdown and a two-point conversion, I don't see that happening with him anymore. I think they did well in the draft, but again, I think a big issue that they have is that they're not playing the right personnel at the right time by committee or just by performance right now. So for me, they get a D+.
All right. Without further ado, I will throw it to our Walk the Line expert. Let's walk the line with Reggie Walker.
First of all, let me put out here, my commentary is no way a reflection of Jeremy York, Coach Haywood Hill, End Zone, Falcon Zones, or any of their sponsors. People, the definition of a mirage is a naturally occurring optical phenomenon in which light rays are bent to produce a displaced image of distant objects or the sky. The definition of a hallucination is a perception in the absence of external stimulus that qualities of real perception, or that has qualities of real perception. Ultimately, these terms define the relationships between the Atlanta Falcons franchise and its fan base, if either can be called such a thing. To the franchise, which I term the mirage, stop telling this lie that we are just one piece away. Fans aren't dumb, Mr. Blank. We see what's going on. We are continuously forced to accept the promise for maybe next year with the same results. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Some would say that Falcons is an acronym. Fans always left counting on next season. You want my PSLs? Give me a Lombardi. Bottom line is, Smith has lost a team. Thomas Dimitroff mortgaged our future on an almost superstar, and there is no connection between them and us. I watch Cam give a football for every touchdown, home or away. I watch small children yell for just recognition from Julio, Roddy White, Matt Ryan, with no response. There is energy with us. Sometimes, just what they may need to dig deep. See the 12th man in Seattle for reference if you need to. Bottom line, fix the team, Mr. Blank, and stop trying to sell us the team. Winning doesn't require a billboard. To my fan base, which I term the hallucination in this, I personally despise homegrown haters of our local teams. Yeah, everyone has their choice and can cheer for whom they want, but I can think of a few cities where your team loyalty is instilled at birth. And should you decide to bypass your birthright, you were silent about it, and you better be prepared to pay rent starting in grammar school. However, bandwagon fans are just as bad. Rabid when we're winning, venomous when we're losing. 2 years ago at 13-3, you couldn't find merchandise anywhere. Now, people are practically giving it away. It is absolutely appalling that our team had to go to a silent count within the Atlanta city limits. We complain about their lack of intensity for us. Well, you guess what? I can't blame them. Now, am I telling you to resort to violence? Absolutely not. I'm only asking you to resort to being warriors for our team. Again, see Seattle's 12th man for reference. For those who have been, keep rising up. For all others, I will say what I am sure the players would love to say if they could. Love us or leave us alone. I say to you, personally, pick Atlanta. Keep your mouth shut or remember that Hartsfield Airport is open 24 hours a day, and they've got plenty of one-way flights out of Atlanta. I am Reggie Walker, and this is Walking the Line.
I'll admit that I'm a fool for you, because you're mine. I walk the line.
And that was, of course, Mr. Reggie Walker with A Walk the Line. And I, once again, not only do I applaud the efforts in the overall segment, but I'm totally on board with you there. It's, you know, to the people that it needed to, I hope it was the wake-up call or the punch in the mouth to get their attention.
I mean, again, Jeremy, it just goes to speak. Every year we are left with this. We are one player away. We're one player away. Fix the team. You don't have to do a whole bunch of alchemy and magical tricks. Fix the team. Whatever it takes. You can sell me on a rebound, on a rebuild. You can sell me on, hey, guess what, guys? We know we're still a few points away, or we're still a few people away, or we're a scheme away, or whatever the case may be. But stop trying to sell me on a dream. Stop selling me on a dream. And again, to the fans, I mean, I'm as critical as I am of the players, that you had to witness in Chicago, or in Atlanta, that you had to witness at that Chicago game was ridiculous. That should never, no home team should ever have to go to a silent count at home. That's absolutely ridiculous. And you guys know me, if I'm ever going to sell my ticket or give my ticket away, the prerequisite has to be that they are an Atlanta fan. I had some tickets to the New York Giants game a couple of weeks ago that I gave away, but I gave them to someone that was an Atlanta fan. They could not even be a New York fan, and that was in their stadium. And I think sometimes, you know, as a player, and Coach, you could probably speak more to this, as a player, it's got to be disheartening to come into your own stadium and know that you're not going to get the support that you need. And I think that's a big problem for these guys as well. They don't trust each other, and they don't trust us as fans. And I think we've got to do our part to show them that we're behind them regardless.
I mean, absolutely, Reginald. I mean, it's just like playing on the road. I mean, you have so many factors as you go and play in an opponent's stadium. If you have those same elements in your own, you just play 16 road games.
Yep, and as we talk about road games, the next four games, first of all, I guess it can be the trivia for this week. I'm just going to throw the number 38 out there. The number 38. And after we talk about the next four games, which is the next 5 weeks for them, I'll tell you what 38 means to the Falcons. But the next four games, of course, this week they are in Baltimore for the Ravens contest. Next week is a technical home game with air quotations as they take on the Lions in London. That is a 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time start.
I'll be at your house at 8, Jeremy.
Okay. Can you make it 9:15? I may try to sleep a little bit. But the week after that is the bye week. The week after, they are in Tampa, and then they are in Carolina. Basically, the way I look at it, in the next 5 weeks, they have four away games.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And now you, like Coach Hill mentioned, I mean, you've just shown you can't win at home. So home is not even a respite for you now. So, tough schedule.
Here's what I have to say about these next couple of games, guys. This is their opportunity to win the fan base back. Because they won't be at home, here's their opportunity to make their statement. That's why I said this Baltimore game is very, very critical for them. If they lose to Baltimore, you give the ability for Detroit to jump on top of you in London. Because, again, this is a long trip. Again, another distraction going to London. New place. All the, you know, startup that's going to come around having the American players there. Atlanta has to focus on their focus. If they're going to prove me wrong, they have to beat Baltimore. I don't see it right now. I don't see that they have that within themselves to go to Baltimore and do it. Maybe they prove me wrong on Sunday. But that Baltimore game is going to set it off for them going to London and then having Tampa Bay and then going to Carolina, okay? This Baltimore game is the key. If they don't win Baltimore, I'm telling you, because it's a wrap.
Yeah, looking at it real quick, and as we're in the last minute or so of the show here, I look at maybe one with a possible two wins of those four games coming up, and even then I'm not so sure. But I told you guys the number 38. Any guesses as to what that means to the Falcons?
The number of consecutive road losses?
Not quite. Coach, do you have a guess?
The number of points that they've scored will score in the next four games total.
Well, that could also be true. But no, the number 38 is the number of days until they play their next home game in Atlanta. 38 days from right now. That is a long time.
Very long time. I mean, this is why these next four games is really their season. The next four games that they have. That's the season right there. They got to pull it off. They have to come out of there at best 3-1.
Keep in mind, guys, that their next home game is against the Cleveland Browns, which isn't a pushover team. So, yeah, it could get ugly really quickly here.
Oh, and then the Cardinals are in behind that.
Yeah, I don't take anything from Atlanta's schedule. I think this year they had the toughest schedule I've seen in a couple of years for them. But these next four games or next five games, like you said, coming home, you're coming home to the Browns on top of that and what they've been able to do lately. I mean, this is it for them. This is where it's just do or die over the next 5 weeks. That's it. I mean, you either come out of this 3-1 over these next four weeks while you're away, gives you an opportunity to not be at home, but you have to really be focused. Because I'm telling you, as a coach, traveling for the next 38 days like that is going to be treacherous on this football team. I mean, they have to be so focused. It is unreal. It is unreal what they're about to go through. But if they can pull through this, they have a chance to salvage their season.
Definitely so. And that is going to do it for us for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We try not to beat you guys up too much. But the people that needed to hear it, I hope they did. As always, we'll have the information for the Javonte Woods Foundation, Icky Woods Sons Foundation, so you can go check that out. You can find us at 3 End Zone, at the Impact 99. Reggie, yours is?
At ATLEN73.
And we'll get Coach used to being on Twitter very soon. But for the Coach Haywood Hill and Reggie Walker, I am Jeremy York. We'll see you next week.
Yes, sir.